ओम ज्ञानस्मिन् दस्यल्पिनञ्जनाशुलकया चक्षुन्मीतां तेन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभृष्टं स्थापितं तेन भूतलं स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति चतुरान्तिकम्. ओके, लिटल हिस्टोरिकल लुक एट प्रीचिंग इफ यू लाइक. In the beginning, when I, of course it wasn't the beginning, but when I joined in 1968, there wasn't a whole lot of preaching. There was, we had our little world there inside the 26th Second Avenue, and we used to go out to Tompkins Square Park on the weekend, on a Sunday, and we used to try to distribute BTG through the stores in the neighborhood, which meant the head shops in the neighborhood. And there wasn't a whole lot more than that. That was pretty much the story there in New York. And I'd commented before that the mindset of most of us at that time was that Krishna consciousness might be taken up on the Lower East Side. You know, we would hope that all the hippies who were, due to their radical nature, eligible to take the Krishna consciousness, they were the market. Mm-hmm. We would hope that the hippies might pick it up. And Satsuki Maharaj took that one step further, and he wrote quite rightly, actually we didn't want it to go beyond that. We didn't want Krishna consciousness to be in the hands of the straights, the conventional people of the world. God forbid they should take the Krishna consciousness. Well, no, Prabhupada was a different category altogether. But anyway, that mindset was there. But we were into spreading it among our friends in the hippie community. The word preaching was not a favorite word, and probably still isn't. It was a favorite word with Prabhupada. Liked that word, preach. I remember we were sitting one time with Vishnu. We were sitting in Prabhupada's apartment. Prabhupada was leaving Brooklyn, and he was talking to Dhammatirtha and Bhakti. Vishnu Janmaraj came in, and preach. But the way that word comes across in our Western contemporary culture is no. I practically banned the word in Back to Godhead when I was editor. Teach, spread. Propagate was kind of marginal, but teach, spread, share, distribute, anything but preach. Because preach has that connotation with it, to it. The adjective is preachy. It is not a warm, fuzzy adjective. But Prabhupada liked this word, preach. In any case, it means to distribute Krishna consciousness to others. And it does set us apart in many ways from other paths where they really don't place much emphasis on distributing their message to others. Or it's kind of, if they're meant to get it, they'll get it. But we're very strongly evangelical, where there is strongly a preaching movement, which is something Srila Prabhupada really had to bang into our heads, because I think a lot of us were not very interested in sharing it with others vigorously. We were fine talking to people about it if they came to the temple, but the idea of, you know, standing on a street corner or something and actually getting unwilling people to give us a hearing may not have been what we joined for. Mm-hmm. We joined more for our own interest, our own welfare, and not so much to take part in a vigorous evangelical movement. So we can advertise, join in a vigorous evangelical movement. We probably wouldn't have signed on. But Prabhupada made it clear to us that that's what we're up to, at least what he was up to. And he explained one time, he said, Madhusudana Gadgada wrote to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was recovering from this. That's both. He wrote to Prabhupada that it's better that you should rest and not preach, not engage yourself. Prabhupada wrote him back and said, my dear boy, if I didn't preach, where would you be? Where would you be? So our good fortune in coming in touch with Krishna consciousness is due to the vigorous evangelical efforts of others, starting with Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada pushed us into going out on Sankirtan, means chanting. We were going out once a week, and Prabhupada started pushing that we should go out every day, and at least for an hour. That was like, all right, those who were very busy, exactly what we were busy with, so all the time, it's hard to say now. But those of us who were very busy, at least we should go out for an hour, and there'd be chanting parties. And we started doing that, and Prabhupada, at that time, started pushing us to distribute DVDs. And his mantra then was that any gentleman would give a quarter. So, get them to take DVDs. And once that was going, and it became quite brisk at that time, the Prabhupada started pushing books because he got that. Bhagavad Gita came from the Knorr in the first degree tradition, teaching the Buddha to come in. So, the Prabhupada wanted us also to distribute books. And we distributed a few tentative books. Kirtan party, not very much, but something. And then gradually Prabhupada was pushing, then he began pushing more about book distribution, that it was even more important than the Kirtan party, that we could close the temple and just leave one person back to do the pujari, and the rest of us could all go out and distribute books. He was really strongly pushing on book distribution as the best preaching. The comment was famous, what will your 2 minutes lecture do? And if he takes the book, his whole life can change. So Prabhupada was pushing book distribution as the best form of preaching. And of course he was also encouraging in other ways. Bhaktivedanta Institute was also in Prabhupada's mind a kind of preaching. And Prabhupada himself was busy preaching to the devotees, preaching to whoever actually. And pushing, preaching, 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 preaching. And there's India, more preaching, different kinds of preaching than we used to. And the rest, Prabhupada began preaching there. And maybe that's historically sort of explained. Where should we go from there? Maybe we can just do. You might have a question or two.
Well, it's very interesting how you say that you can probably use the word preach a lot, and that's where you probably kind of get it from that word.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been caught dead using the word, but Prabhupada used it next year.
Mm-hmm.
Where it came from, I think, for most of us.
Mm-hmm. So, it's interesting then that you say we started preaching first, then you go to Panam, and get some magazines, and some books, and then that catches on. And then everyone joins us to do all the things, but you didn't start off like that, in a sense. You didn't mean it.
Well, yeah. Right, and first it was really like a little band of faithful followers who gathered around Prabhupada and kind of told their friends and a loose social network. But then, as it got going, Prabhupada was just taking every opportunity to increase it and mm-hmm. expand it. And I think he had his idea from the beginning what he wanted, or at least he saw the opportunities. Life's pushing to expand.
So in terms of preaching and come, so the first phase is very friendly, just expand to your friend, expand on you,
and we would go out, you know, in the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and tell people how good it was, how cool it was, how you could stay high forever by chanting mm-hmm. Hare Krishna. So there was some early evangelical effort, almost entirely directed at the hippie community, mm-hmm. which at that time was a community that had a lot of bright young people in it. Mm-hmm. Bright young intoxicated people, but bright and young. That feature of society has changed quite drastically. Mm-hmm. Now the people that you find them, you know, anyone you find them loafing around the street is a bum. Mm-hmm. But in those days, for a short time, there were bright young people just available that left schools and colleges or declined to go, and they were interested in all sorts of alternative ideas. Quite an extraordinary finding. A lot of available people who weren't doing, you know, who weren't committed to other things and could actually take part. Very different atmosphere.
Yeah. So after nearly 40 years of preaching and how things have changed, the eventual two generations practically have three basic, three most important things to learn about.
Oh. Number one, do it.
Mm-hmm.
Prabhupada told that to Satsuma Maharaj also. Satsuma Maharaj said he wasn't very good at giving lectures, so if they just do it, Krishna will give you the intelligence. Prabhupada said in the beginning, I also wasn't very bold at doing it. So that's the first thing, just do it. Maybe that's the second and third thing, too.
Yeah,
that, of course, that books are extremely important preaching, but just talking is not as effective as books. And another, I suppose, is that there needs to be a context in which people can apply what they've learned or what's appealed to them. But if you just go out there and distribute books, or you go out there and chant, or you go out there and tell people it's so great, and you don't have something to offer them in terms of something that's contextually appropriate and attractive to them, you're not going to get so far. Prabhupada developed Juhu that way. It made sense for the audience he was trying to reach. And there have been other sorts of programs that have been appealing or attractive to people. And that's an essential part of our preaching, I'd say. I think we wasted a lot of time, we invested a lot of energy in the 1970s, especially in one-shot deals. In essentially contacting people and giving them a first introduction, but without any further contact or cultivation. So that, how many people got books in the 1970s? Enormous numbers of people. But then how many of those people were receive some sort of follow-up, an invitation, some sort of further to read further, to come to the temple, or to to attend some sort of meeting or to learn more in some way. It was pretty much a one-shot deal. So much so that there was hardly regard for the idea that the person might be a repeat customer. You know, you sell them a book somehow or other by hook or by crook. And if you got the book, you know, you succeeded. It didn't matter how much the person might have been offended, turned off, exasperated, or simply how interested the person might be. There was no systematic programming. Sometimes you'd meet a person and say, wow, he's a really interesting person. You'd give him a card, you'd invite him, maybe you might on some extraordinary occasion take someone's address. But there was no systematic program, or hardly, for following up with people. Mm-hmm. Even though the interest was, in many cases, was there. You know, good opportunity. So that's, I think, a lesson that preaching means more than just going out and meeting a person for the first time. It means having some program by which to cultivate a person's interest and give him a context in which he can take part in Krishna consciousness in a way that's going to work for him, that's going to be sensible, that he can actually do. And maybe a further lesson is that it comes under the first category, just doing it is better than not doing it. Just because our preaching isn't very sophisticated, or because we don't have this, we don't have that, so we're not going to say anything. That's like, we'll stay back at our home or our temple because that wasn't Prabhupada's method. Prabhupada just somehow would take what he had and run with it. That's good. More? Yeah.
I was just thinking about how the expression is the better part of valor, and in preaching, as devotees, we have a very intense experience in spiritual life, which can make us very enthusiastic to share that with other people. And I've seen, like, in my own preaching, that sometimes my enthusiasm actually is off-putting to people.
Well, I had a story about that, actually, because I've always tried to be sensitive to that, and with varying degrees of success, I might add. But there was one incident. We were at an airport with Srila Prabhupada. I think we were seeing Prabhupada off. And we have one godbrother who's quite loud and forceful, and you really know he's there, because when he's there, he's there. By God, he's there. And he was there at the airport. And we were seeing Srila Prabhupada off. And there were people, other passengers waiting for the flight. And there was one businessman who was there. And this devotee buttonholed him and started telling him the meaning of life, telling him, whatever it was, I don't recall precisely what he was telling him, but he was telling him with great force and with all the youthful enthusiasm that he had, and the loud voice and with logic and with reason and with insistence and with everything going. And the businessman was kind of in many polite ways trying to tell him to buzz off, to indicate that, he was very grateful that this young fellow was sharing his message, but it would be very good of him to thank you very much, and let me go back to my newspaper or my whatever it was. And that, of course, didn't work. This person was just, this devotee was just on him and on him and on him. I was thinking, oh God, Just think, you know, what is this? What are we doing to this guy? And then I looked over at Prabhupada. Prabhupada was just enjoying. And I thought about it, and at the time I thought, well, gee, you know, probably if it had been up to me, the businessman would have been sitting in his chair, I'd been sitting in my chair, and nothing would have happened. So at least this devotee, whatever his failings, had taken the initiative to try to impress something on this person. Perhaps not with the greatest tact and finesse, but he's doing it. Which is where I got that third point from, that preaching is better than not preaching.
Mm-hmm. It seems that increasingly, because devotees don't perhaps move into temples, they don't get involved in the beginning of years of their devotional service and actually sort of direct preaching or book distribution or even hiring them. But that sort of seems to be a very increasing trend, and also these people then even become fearful of giving association to non-devotees. Perhaps you could talk a little bit about the effect of not preaching. What happens with them?
Interesting thought. I don't know that there's an effect of, well, I guess there's an effect of not, an effect of not preaching would be like for someone who was preaching and then stopped, but in this case you have people who really just haven't gone into that. I suppose we'd say they're missing something, that there's a taste that comes from giving Krishna consciousness to others, and there's an enthusiasm that's generated from giving Krishna consciousness to others. There are realizations that come from those exchanges that you have with people, which are really invaluable for spiritual development, for one's own, yeah, for one's own advancement. And when we do that, we get the benefit, and when we don't, we miss out. I think a lot of the difficulties that we have in the present Krishna consciousness movement stem from the decline in this organized preaching, going out and sharing Krishna's message with others. The people, you know, who might have in the 1970s gone out and distributed books or tried to persuade people in some way to take part in Krishna consciousness, now, you know, are engaged in criticizing one another or kvetching about this or that shortcoming in Krishna consciousness, or working up various conspiracy theories, or whatever it is. And it means that to the extent that that's going on, the movement becomes very much inward and stagnates, really. You know, all that energy to just chewing the chewed. And those same people were to go out and actually try to reach people, they would get inspiration and life and enthusiasm. Or even people, you know, not taking that sort of extreme, but people who are, you know, just kind of in a whose existence has become a little pedestrian, a little humdrum, a little ordinary. When they go out and try to do something, they get some enlightenment, some inspiration. I think Vaisheshika could have started that weekend warrior program in America, where devotees who either have or haven't distributed books in the past go out at least for a day or 2 days in a week, they're working or whatever they're doing, and they get inspiration, they get enthusiasm. And there's a taste there that's really can't be matched. Krishna appreciates it. he wants this message to be. I think there's also a tendency to see preaching in terms of stereotypical approaches. There's a lot of doing things that we've done before in the way that we've done them before. You know, the hippies are our best customers, Prabhupada said, so they must still be our best customers, even if they don't exist. Techniques and approaches that were sort of inspirations that devotees had back in the 60s and 70s are still carried forward as though they were still as if they were still the best strategies, the ones that would most likely click with people, and so on. And there's a need for new ideas, new inspirations, new approaches, new ways to do things. We hear at the BBT that, you know, the book covers are still like 1970s book cover design, for example. Or we hear, you know, just see so many things that are the old way of doing it. And not to say that old tried and true methods should be ditched, because things that work are well worth keeping. But one of the features of those early days was innovation, and devotees sort of taxing their brains, as Prabhupada would say, to come up with new ways to reach people. And if we apply that now, we'll find new things, new avenues, new audiences, new venues, new sorts of programs, without bending Krishna consciousness out of shape. Just finding ways to deliver the stuff. I see that there's a tendency to replace preaching with humanitarian efforts. It's a personal concern of mine. But whereas previously devotees might have felt inspired to give out books and really tell people about Krishna consciousness, now if we feed them and tell them something about vegetarianism, then we've really done something. Whereas it's really a pretty watery sort of a contribution to people's lives. This doesn't have quite the same force as giving a person a book and telling them something about Krishna.
Question. Why do you think this decline of the outgoing tendency within Krishna consciousness comes?
Different reasons. One is sociological. You know, there's been an enormous shift from essentially temple-based brahmachari culture to a home-based married life. And married couples simply don't generally have the available time to invest in preaching. I think there's been an enormous decline in faith, actually, in the Krishna consciousness movement, mostly attributable to disappointments in leadership. And so that people have felt less enthusiasm about preaching because they have less confidence in what the person they're preaching to is going to get. Whereas in Prabhupada's time, people felt that, you know, that they were going to get the very best of everything. In later days, people have wondered, you know, am I spoiling this person's life by bringing him to the Krishna consciousness movement? Am I setting him up for disappointments? Am I cheating this person? Am I inspired? You know, there's a lot of people who themselves are wondering whether they want to be in the Krishna consciousness movement and to what extent. When people themselves are feeling uninspired or very tentative about their commitments or have lost confidence in the process, then naturally preaching is going to go down. You spread the good news when you're absolutely convinced that it's the best thing going, and there could be nothing better you could do for a person than to give them this. But then when people's faith is weak, then that inspiration lessens. I think that's a contributing factor also. I think there's also been there's been historical periods when our management has shot itself in the foot by trying to move or transfer the energy of book distribution and preaching into essentially programs for economic development, where people had been encouraged to distribute books and were very good at it, and were turning over a lot of merchandise. Managers saw, well, if they're turning over this merchandise, they could turn over other merchandise that would be more profitable.
Mm-hmm.
And that largely boomeranged, because the people who were distributing books, by distributing those books, were getting spiritual enthusiasm, spiritual nourishment, spiritual realization. And when the managers tried to move that over into selling paintings or beach towels or whatever, the so-called preachers would not get the same inspiration. It's hard to come back and say, and I've heard it, that Krishna inspired this person from within to take a painting, of a house by the beach and some seagulls, There's only so much inspiration that you get out of that. And the result is, in many cases, either the person just becomes uninspired and thinks, what am I doing this for? It's just a job. I'm just giving money to who knows what. Or the person says, wow, I'm doing pretty well at this. I'm turning over a lot of merchandise, a lot of money. Well, why should I be giving it to these guys? I could be supporting my family this way. I could be, doing quite well for myself. Why do I have to, why do I have to hand it over? When you lose the anchor to the direct distribution of spiritual knowledge, it becomes essentially business. And then you either figure, well, why should I didn't join this movement to do business, or, well, since I'm doing business, let's do business. And then they cut out the partners.
Krishna,
Balaram, and everyone else. So that ruins the person's spiritual development. So that has there's been that historical development at times. Now that's rather declined, largely because the people, it's already happened and it's done. Either the people have left and said forget it, or else they've gone into business for themselves. So there's not a whole lot of people available to do that sort of thing. It's played out its destiny.
And kind of moved to that period. I think a lot of the words resisted doing that. They wanted to. They thought it was a real step down. But in doing it, a lot of temples and maybe even countries lost the culture of preaching that had developed.
Yeah.
With a very strong culture, and everyone just preached, it was so joyous thing to do. Everyone wanted to do it, but going through that period, people just lost the will, and the culture of preaching. That's not what people joined into. They joined into a culture of saying, just not attracting the preaching began. So,
their prophet was dead against it.
Yeah.
Even. Somebody introduced records at one point, even Krishna conscious records, probably. Mm-hmm. It was candid. Didn't want to divert attention from distributing books.
Yeah, none of them was quote Bodhisattva.
Hmm?
I don't know if we found that quote in Bodhisattva, that could be a different use of that
There's a lot of ways that what Prabhupada didn't want can be presented as what Prabhupada did want.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, people, doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't work, and it sometimes takes people a long time to find out that it doesn't work because it's bringing in money.
Mm-hmm.
The ingresos, the earnings are increasing, so it looks like the company is doing well. But actually the company is headed straight down.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've just taken your people and cut out the reason for them to be members. And also then your prospective members, you know, they look around, they meet people and they figure out what's going to happen. If I join this movement, I'm going to be out on some street corner peddling beach towels or smile buttons or whatever it is. And is that what an idealistic young person really wants to do with his life? So you not only discourage your present membership, but you also really discourage prospective membership also, because they look and say, this is not a picture to me that's inspiring. The preaching itself, you know, the idea of becoming a preacher, that itself is hard for some people to get into. But the idea of just, you know, standing out on a street corner selling buttons with no perceivable connection other than a financial one is really unattractive.
Mm.
So I think that was a historical blunder of considerable proportions.
Mm. Given the analysis, in terms of the decline of foreign tendency, what would you say the method of the contrast, or what the course of action would be?
Well, good question. Certainly putting the emphasis on the right things. To have leaders, first of all, who are convinced and enthusiastic about preaching, about books. We've seen countries where there's enthusiasm for these things have tended to do very well. You look at Hungary, for example, and Sivaram Maharaj just kept focused on distributing books, on preaching Krishna consciousness, and the country has just flourished. There's so much success that they've had there. And other places where they've kept their eye on the ball that way have done very well. And places where there's no such leader have languished. So the first thing is to have leaders who themselves are convinced and who have focus, who have a vision, who have a focus, who have a clear understanding of what Prabhupada wanted and have confidence that it's valuable, especially this book distribution. Where the books are being distributed, we're seeing things happening. And especially where it's in the context of not just distributing the books, but then having learned something from the past, following up on that distribution of books in various ways to engage people. So that's important. Training new people, like Vaisheshika Prabhushtu, and just giving people a taste. He's extraordinarily good at, a lot of people can do something, but he's a person who can break it down into pieces and tell you what he's doing and how he does it and how you can do the same thing.
Mm.
Quite astonishingly good. He's got the philosophy, he's got the enthusiasm, and he's got the technique, and he's got the ability to show people how he does it and how they can do it. So to give young people a taste of that, I think will help a lot. There's new people coming up who can. Los Angeles is doing very well that way. Suras Prabhu is another person who's very dedicated to distributing books.
Mm-hmm.
And they've developed quite a good core of brahmacharis and others who are going out there and regularly distributing books and who are having a great time. They're getting a lot of enthusiasm and realization and come on from distributing those books. And they've got some older book distributors, Bhagupati and others, who were there and added to the, set the example and added to the enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
So where you've got that, it really goes. It's a success story, Los Angeles, another success. Where there's innovation also, like Devamrita Maharaj has been experimental, come up with different ideas for preaching. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj is quite innovative. So there also you get a kind of enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, try something different. We'll try, you know, instead of programming the temple, how about a temple in a loft? How about a program in a loft? Instead of just doing this, let's try doing that. And see how that goes. Try something.
Mm-hmm.
Not in, you know, outlandish ways, but different ways to give people a message of Bhagavad Gita.
So you're saying that maybe one way is to go back and sort of re-establish the book distribution in a healthy way, learning from the mistakes we did in the past. But then also we could take this, maybe we can think about innovative ways, different ways of approaching to different people. And then my question would be, like, the so-called our academic preaching, our center, or like the devotees, at this place at 22, how you know, could that be part of that innovative direction?
Well, it is innovative. It's not, you know, just to go up to say, you know, professor, you're wasting your life. Life is not for self-realization, not for sense gratification. Why are you wasting your life like a dog and cat? That may not be so persuasive, but by finding ways to establish Krishna consciousness as a credible and creditable philosophy and way of life, we push the Krishna consciousness moving forward. Prabhupada did that also. He was very interested in meeting with professors and presenting Krishna consciousness. Then you have to see what are the opportunities, what are the interest points, the areas where we have something. There's tremendous opportunity if we read Srimad Bhagavatam and look at, you know, the things that are there. There's so many opportunities to take the philosophy, the culture, the ideas, and just bring them forward and say, well, what about this? And present something revolutionary, something, you know, it's not that we have to bend ourselves into pretzels, but if we just take, you know, like from the warehouse that we have such fantastic products in the form of ideas, in the form of cultural values, in the form of ideas and cultural values and practices that people, you know, just like this Krishnadas, this professional person, he's made a big splash with kirtan. You know, it's sort of shameful that, you know, when kirtan is really the specialty of the Hare Krishna movement, we've neglected so many opportunities to just go out and chant Hare Krishna in a way that would appeal to people, so that somebody else who has nothing really to do with this movement has taken it and made it a big success. And really, this garden has kirtan. People, there's a whole kirtan culture, you know, people who are into kirtan. And unfortunately, it's not because of us, at least not directly. So it's like a missed opportunity. There's so many ideas in Prabhupada's books that are timely. You know, they have an immediate application to what's going on in people's lives. But they have to. It has to be pulled out and presented, even, you know, boldly, because sometimes what we have is, like, often very different from what you know, what people are talking about.
Mm.
And on one side, that's its strength. because they're just talking on variations of a theme that's failing. So you come out with something completely different, like communism, which, you know, really took hold in the minds of intellectuals in Europe and America in, what, the 1940s, and so on. You know, it was a very different idea. It was radical. And it radically it appealed to people.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone, but to certainly a section of the people. That's proved to be a failure of a philosophy, a grand failure. But my point is that they, and probably made this point, the communists push and push and push and push their philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So if we take our ideas and present them, it doesn't matter that they're radical, or it's an advantage that they're radical. People will take it and say, well, what is this? There are markets that are, you know, open, where there's no, where nobody's really offering something, that we can, where we can go in, we can say something that will knock people out, and people say, wow, this is really something that you're saying. The message of the Bhagavad Gita, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, has such power that if we have confidence in the power of that message and present it, it will act. And, you know, we don't know where and what circles and what, you know, what sort of people. I think there's sometimes a timidity, you know, that we can't approach people in the higher echelons because we, you know, we don't have anything to give them. We have such valuable stuff to give them. This needs to be presented, you know. Presented, first of all, some way or other, but it's presented thoughtfully and appropriately. There we go.
It almost comes to the same point, and now you mentioned that, again, the faith. If we would have the faith
mm-hmm.
in what we are presenting,
mm-hmm.
and you would definitely do it rigorously then.
Sure.
And it would be confident, better, that it would be to be spent on another bit. Or change at the center. And perhaps my question would be, would you know, experience on books distribution as the primary experience of Krishna consciousness would be beneficial for those other innovative methods as a source of inspiration?
You mean if you distribute books, will that inspire you in other forms of preaching?
It would be, if it would sort of like a build.
Yeah, if we distribute books, if you distribute books, that will inspire you in every other. You know, like you'll go meet. So suppose you go out and you meet people, and you try and distribute a book to someone, and you find out what's going on with people, and you find out how this message connects with their life, how it's relevant to their life, what their thoughts are, what they find attractive about it, what their objections are, and you get all sorts of ideas about, you know, that person represents so many other people who are in a similar situation. You get ideas how to reach these people.
Yeah.
You don't really get that by staying home. Another thought I had also is that another source of renewed enthusiasm for preachers is Vanaprastha life. Because we've been through this thing where a lot of people who were brahmacharis got married and, you know, kind of became preoccupied or engaged with other things than preaching. They have other responsibilities. But that's not supposed to be eternal. That's supposed to be for some years, and then you come out of householder life, you retire from the householder life, and that's an opportunity again to increase preaching, right? By, you know, people who are mature and who done so many things and know what the world is and also know what the philosophy is. And if those people take it in hand, that their business is not just to, you know, buy a home and a lotula and retire, but to go out and you know, do something, then they'll get, you know, renewed inspiration and they'll be very effective.
I'll go to Jananda Prabhu. Charlie,
excuse me?
Jananda Prabhu.
Jananda.
Yeah.
Oh, Jayananda from the UK.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure. He's attractive person, energetic person. Uh-huh. I didn't know that, but yeah, there's an example. So we have a lot of people who, you know, kind of, it's time for them to move on from the business of earning a living, maintaining a family, raising their children, and so on. It's time for them to move on and actually push Krishna consciousness. But Prabhupada started his movement really in this Vanaprastha life. And then it's a mess. So there's an enormous opportunity. And instead of just getting old and dreary, if our older devotees take the cue from Srimad Bhagavatam or the cue from Prabhupada's life and actually go out and do something, they'll get fantastic inspiration. And they'll get wonderful results. Things will happen. They're capable people. Just need to get out there. Secret doubts.
When I used to do book distribution, I found that more people would come to the temple, but it was because they'd met you in the street and they talked about the place and things like that. But they didn't understand the books at all. They just couldn't. It was too difficult for them to read, apart from a few of them. But I found that very discouraging when I was distributing books. That you give a person a book and then you meet them a week later and they just try to read it, but it just didn't make any sense to them at all. And I've always thought, why can't we have more books that are, easy for people to read?
Yeah, you should have more books.
And some people always say, oh, if they just touch the book and it's something, but surely it would be better if they could also read it.
Of course, books are a little difficult because there's a lot of substance there. But there's lots of scope for books that specifically are introductory in nature or that speak to people in contemporary language or reference contemporary concerns. Lots of room. Just need to stoke up and get people doing it. We have started a division of the DDT that has that in mind as an initiative. So, held back by inexperience, first of all, we pretty much been just churning out the same books for so many years, and also by lack of qualified writers, experienced writers, qualified writers. But the opportunities are there. And we are, we have identified that as something we need to do, and are actively trying to push forward. Prabhupada said to do it. He said, only you should write.
That's the reason we come here for. Hoping that some of you people actually do something. So it can be used to do for a confident people.
And you look at such as just one guy has kind of taken it in hand to try and do it, and he's come up with quite a number of folks that have had an effect. Yeah, it's just driven to do that. It's been some good stuff. Temporary mind, although not within this kind, pursue that and have good response.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he was a person who wasn't known for being a writer. Thinks about how to preach, thinks about how to identify, make his thoughts.
Am
I hopeful that these things will be resolved?
Some people can feel very depressed and things come up and go on.
Well,
you just have to listen far and down and someday wish will be fulfilled and we'll all just do book distribution.
There's some good opportunities. It's just a question of identifying them and moving on. The encouraging thing is there's lots of room for improvement.
Yeah. The only way is up.
Yeah.
It must be very hard if you, well, maybe a bit hard if you join on the Prabhupada there, but it's after this, like if you join in the mid-90s or something, it's just all up.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a I'm inspired especially with potential among our young people. You know, young people who are joining or young people who grew up in the movement. There's a lot more, you know, fresh energy there that can drive things. A lot of our older devotees are just tired. You know, they're biologically less energetic. They're tied down in various sort of things that occupy their energy. And they just don't have that same youthful enthusiasm. And, you know, you don't really expect it. Although you'd like to see rejuvenation, and you know, certainly you can expect that from many of the devotees. But youth is fantastic, and young, overflowing energy that can be directed, and especially if they take knowledge and guidance and help from senior devotees. They can really learn a really good country. I like that there's, like what you're doing with the website, where people have an opportunity to write something short and pithy. We like to be doing that at Krishna.com also, and we'd like to see it in PPV also. People, you know, could, to write the great American novel or something may not be really in our immediate scope, but if we, you know, turn out a couple of pages, a couple thousand words or something, not such a daunting task, and somebody does that regularly, it can become quiet, quite good.
There's something
you can
do. I mean,
websites are meant for short messages.
Mm. But it's perfect to kind of develop a preference. If anyone has been talking to it, you start now. And in 5 years' time, you're fairly, you have a good capacity, you can really national newspaper. You know, he's writing a letter into a national newspaper and we publish it because it's pretty and it's well written. And the publisher has the some kind of philosophy of course getting things like that we can start to have a real effect. So it's very simple, just from learning how to write.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And we've never done it generally, we write as we speak in that kind of we just been a hog dog camel and no one's gonna publish it anyway. So it's just a way to do these things.
Look at major publishers, this is usually where they're getting their books from, is from people in the universities.
Mm-hmm.
It's a culture for ideas and communication. There's like a natural relationship there between DDT and the center.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.